Welcome to Everything is Changing. In each episode, we focus on circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water resources. I am Ahmetcan Uzlaşık. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing.
My guest today is Dr. Debbie Sanders, an ecologist, an entrepreneur who has spent more than 20 years working with threatened species and building tools to protect them. She founded Wildlife Drones, a company that helps researchers track small animals in the wild. And more recently, she started NatureHelm, a platform that helps businesses to understand and act on their impact on biodiversity. In our conversation, we talk about her journey, the challenges facing biodiversity today, and how technology can help us create change.
Dr. Debbie Sanders, welcome to the Everything is Changing. If that's okay, I want to start with your personal journey. I want to ask, what sparked your passion for wildlife conservation and what led you from the field into tech entrepreneurship?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always, I grew up in Sydney, but I've always had a love for bushland or the native forests. I spent a lot of time outdoors as a child, and so I've always had this connection with the outdoors, and that's always floats right through my career. And studied zoology, I did my honours, then I did my PhD on a small migratory species that's critically endangered. And I just love nothing more than being out in the wild. That's my favourite place. The furthest I am away from civilization, the happier I am. And so it's always been the theme throughout my life. It's just something that lights my fire and a really really loved, and for me, it's really important to protect the amazing diversity and connections that exist in nature. And so that is sort of, you know, throughout my career coming different in different forms. But it was really after I did my PhD, I had already worked in environmental consulting industry, looking at impact assessment. I'd worked in state government on national parks and wildlife type initiatives and recovery programs. But then I did my PhD research and just became more and more fascinated with bird migration and dynamic movements and dynamic ecosystems and environments. And in Australia, we have, like, you know, massive droughts and massive floods and massive wildfires as well now. Really, really extreme environments in which species have to exist. And so we have this amazing combination of really unique things in the world here, and migration within that is really different to what you might hear about in Europe or America, where you have these major flyways and really obvious migratory movements. Just, yeah, understanding there's even more dynamic migration systems is where the passion for, you know, took me sideways into technology, if you like, really wanting to track these small endangered birds. We knew nothing about their movements at all. We didn't know how they got from their breeding to the wintering range. We didn't know how they found their food each year. And for me, that was a really big piece of the puzzle that was missing. And so I went searching for technology solutions to help me track this bird, which is the swift parrot. It's really unique. You know, there's only 3 migratory parrots in the world and they're all here in Australia. So really amazing. But there was no technology available. And so I'm like, well, I'm going to have to find a way to make that available and to create a solution to help me understand this problem that I really want to understand if we want to protect this species. And so it was many years in the making of having an idea of how to track them. And satellite tags are too big to be able to put on these really small birds, and GPS tags are also too big. There was nothing other than a radio tag, a really tiny VHF or very high frequency radio tag, just goes beep, beep. And that's about it. And you have to go find it, really. So that was the best tag we could use. So we decided, well, rather than trying to reinvent the tag, because lots of people were trying to do that, was actually to reinvent how we find these little tags that are used for small species. And we developed some drone sensor technology. I did it as a research project initially, just trying to find a solution for my own research problem that I had. And then after a few years of many challenges along the way, my first sort of dipping my toe in the, you know, developing technology pool, if you like, we actually demonstrated that it was possible to track these tags from a drone, because a drone can go up high, it can maximize the line of sight with the tag, maximize the detectability of it, but cover big areas really quickly compared to being on the ground and holding your arm up in the air with an antenna listening for that beep for hours on end, or not hearing anything at all. So we thought, right, let's drone do the walking for us, or the flying. And so that really changed the trajectory of my career, because once we showed it was possible to do this, I was inundated with people from all over the world saying, I really want one of those as well. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's great, but I don't know what I'm going to do about that, because what we'd built was really a really unuser-friendly prototype, if you like. Many, many constraints, many problems, which meant it wasn't a practical tool in any sense of the word. And we'd just finished our project. We had no more funding. So I then had to start looking into, like, how can I make this happen? It seems like there's a real need out there for this technology. And so I started going to innovation courses and educating myself on what it takes to turn an idea or a prototype into a product that people can use. And I haven't turned back since. It's just been more and more and more technology. So we ended up establishing Wildlife Drones, which was my first startup company. And that was established in 2016. So it has been going for quite some time. And that technology is still the only type of its kind in the world, and so it is now used in 8 countries, in the US, Vietnam, New Zealand, Australia, Chile, Ecuador, being used in the Galapagos Islands is a real highlight for me, but also, you know, the wetlands of Canada, in the wetlands of Florida as well, and in mountains across almost every ecosystem you can imagine that. And so for me, I never imagined that when I started my career and I used to go bird watching for my job, that I would be developing this type of technology and that I could actually have a positive influence on how effective other people are and sort of amplify from what my knowledge is that others can do great things as well. So that was really exciting. But in that journey, there's a very specific research problem that was being addressed for management purposes, but it was really a research tool. But it's become more and more apparent as the nature crisis is becoming more prevalent and acknowledged in society that new opportunities were opening up for scaling up biodiversity conservation. And when the Global Biodiversity Framework was signed off, I was like, oh, okay, well, companies need biodiversity data, and biodiversity data is what I've always worked with, various species and what have you. So I went looking for a solution to see what they would be using, and I couldn't find one that actually provided help for companies, what they can do on the ground to create change today, because it's such an urgent issue. We can't afford to wait down the line, but we need to make the most of what data we already have. And so that was the inspiration for then starting a second product, which is a biodiversity data platform called Nature Helm, which really helps companies navigate this immense amount of complex data and make sense of it in relation to their business, but also really help them make decisions about what can I do about it right now.
Well, I will go back to Nature Helm for sure, but first I want to ask more about the biodiversity challenges that we have today. You have been on the ground working with threatened species for over 20 years. Yeah. What was that like, and how did it shape the way you see today's biodiversity challenges? What are they, and also what are the main challenges perhaps that we have today?
Yeah, look, I think certainly the perception of biodiversity has shifted dramatically. When I first started working in this space as a consultant, threatened species was seen as this really negative thing. People would do anything to not be associated with a threatened species. And I think I'm pleased to see that this has actually been turned around, and now threatened species are seen as an asset or a sign something is being done right because you're supporting something that is so rare. And there's actually more value placed on that. So I think that is a fundamental shift, which really is, it amazes me how far it's actually come in terms of now, you know, getting to talk to companies that work across multiple countries and millions of hectares around the world about biodiversity. Like, I never thought in my time that would happen. There's also a lot more regulation now that is targeted for this to happen, and I think that is what is needed. I think there's always action from the top down in terms of regulation, but also from the bottom up, sort of, you know, grassroots action and that these two things really need to meet in order to address the challenges that we're really faced with biodiversity more broadly.
I don't know if that actually answers your question.
Well, yeah, okay. It definitely does. Nature Helm is such a unique concept. I'm honestly, personally, I've never seen something like that before. It's a biodiversity intelligence platform for businesses, as you already mentioned it a bit. But what was the moment, what was that aha moment that you realized that we really need something like this for businesses?
Yeah, sure.
Can you be more specific on that?
Yeah, there was definitely a moment when this idea began to be explored. And I was actually in Singapore at a biodiversity accelerator program. And even that alone, that was, as far as I'm aware, the world's first accelerator program for biodiversity. I'm like, is that a thing? Is that really a thing? That's so exciting. You know, the world is coming along and are you catching up kind of thing. So I was there and there was a very, you know, series of different presentations from organizations, including the Singapore Central Bank. And for me, as an ecologist walking around in the bush looking at birds, I've never met somebody from a central bank, from a finance background. And here they were presenting to me and talking about biodiversity and the importance of biodiversity. I'm like, wow, okay, this has gone to the highest levels, you know, in the finance space. People are really taking this seriously. And so for me, that was a real eye-opening experience. And then meeting a whole suite of investors as well who had an interest specifically in biodiversity. And then we started seeing sort of more nature-related initiatives coming out and what have you. It's still, you know, evolving and emerging, but that was the first moment. And it was actually talking to my mentors as part of that program from Silver Strand Capital, who were running the accelerator program. They were actually the ones that pointed out from their knowledge of the finance space that there was this need for biodiversity data and that perhaps I was, you know, beautifully positioned to help with that problem. So that is where I first began exploring this idea when I attended that event. So I think it shows that the importance of, you know, having good networks and mentors and having programs where you can share thoughts and ideas that might spur something new.
Well, going more into what you do, because when I first started to research on Nature Helm, I was having a bit of a hard trouble because I didn't have a conservation background, biodiversity background, and I also don't have a tech background. So when people ask, how do you simply explain what do you do in Nature Helm? Like let's say you're having a coffee with your friend at a cafe, how would you explain to her in, let's say, a couple of minutes?
Yeah, sure. I would say that we are helping people understand and connect with nature and understand how they are connected in a business sense. And so sometimes people in a city might struggle with that, like, oh, but I'm in a city, I'm not connected to nature. But everybody uses water, for example. And water is more than just a substance we drink and use. It's actually an ecosystem that is full of biodiversity if it is healthy. And that's just one ecosystem that everybody uses. And so everybody has some connection to nature and relies on it being good quality and good condition in order for us to make use of it. It's the same for the ecosystem and the animals and the plants and all the microorganisms. All of our food is dependent on healthy landscapes. There are landscapes in the world that have been trashed and really are not productive anymore. And so that's how I see, like, we all eat food and we all drink water. So even at that basic essential needs of humans, we all are reliant on nature providing services for us, but also services to the natural world to continue to function. And that's getting a lot more challenging now, you know, with the climate changing and all of the, you know, the cycles of all these interconnected things are being shifted and pushed around. It's super important to understand how these things are interconnected between themselves as well as with people in order for us to be able to adapt and be more resilient. Because if we don't understand, for example, pollinators, the pollinators that pollinate the crops and we eat the food. If the pollinators drop out of the landscape because of disease or climatic changes, what are we going to do about it? What are the alternatives? What function do they play? And what can we do to help support the species that could fill that niche or fill that gap so that we can still produce fiber for clothing, we can still produce food for eating, and we can all have clean water to drink. And biodiversity plays a key role in all of that.
Well, I'm convinced for sure.
Excellent.
Nowadays, a lot of people talk about, you know, these nature positive goals. Sustainability kind of became like a buzzword. But I guess few actually know what it really means in a business context. How do you ensure that the businesses that you work with are turning these ambitions into real actions?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways because different companies are at different parts in their journey. So there are companies that actually, they really don't know where to begin. And so we want to help them begin the journey by aggregating many, many different types of data sources of biodiversity and conveying it to them in a way that they can relate. And so we do this really rapid screening of all of their sites, wherever they may be around the world, to give them insights on what species are known to occur at that location right now. And what are your business activities at that each location? And then we underpin the species data with the function. So what do they actually do? They might be a pollinator or they might be a water purifier or something like this. So we are actually building like the web of life behind the scenes that underpins all the decision making. And what we're doing is connecting that function with what the business is dependent on, in the case of agriculture, for example, or for businesses that are not necessarily dependent on biodiversity itself, but impact on biodiversity. We connect those species with what impacts on them. So regardless of whether you might be a mining company that's extracting everything from a relatively small footprint, but might be doing something more broadly for biodiversity, that's looking at it from an impact lens. Or if you're in an agricultural company or pharmaceutical company, you might actually be looking, focusing more on how is my supply chain dependent on these different elements and how can I make sure that those elements continue to persist regardless of the changing climate or changing environmental conditions that might be experienced there. So we actually use the species records on the ground to link meaning into what the business is doing. And then we provide insights on what they can do about it. So there's a screening and then just enabling people to look at what sorts of things can they do on the ground. Then there needs to be some decisions about what's actually going to be done. And so we also, there's a lot of companies out there that collecting data on the ground already for biodiversity in the agricultural beverage space, food and beverage and fiber. And the reason they're doing this is because they understand that they need to be resilient. They need to understand what is the condition of the land. And they have a lot of data, but they don't know how to make sense of it. And so once people make a decision and actually start doing monitoring of biodiversity elements on the ground that are relevant to them, we can help them track trends over time, help them decipher what does it actually mean for us? Do we need to adapt? Do we need to do something differently? Or is it working really well? And then it just is in that feedback cycle where we can go, look, it's really, you know, everything's taking a plunge. We really need to look at how we can build back in that functionality. And so there's a lot of tools out there that are high level tools that enable companies to get like a snapshot of what could be there and look at things that are really high level. But most of the companies that we speak to have been through that entire process and they're like, so what do we do? And so we kind of like to think that we're helping companies go beyond the metrics to meaning and actually being impactful for their business to get, you know, we keep getting returns for their business, but also get returns for biodiversity at the same time.
Do you think that we need more regulations and laws on the nation level to put maybe some pressure on businesses, or are we just going to expect that the businesses are just going to be more conscious in the near future? What's your take on that?
Yeah, look, I think it needs a combination. I think if you leave it to voluntary markets alone, it's not going to happen. There are really, you know, the frameworks in place, like the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, or TNFD. There's a lot of companies all around the world that have adopted this framework, and they're working through to try and understand their interface with nature. So, you know, these voluntary frameworks can go a long way to helping support businesses to begin the journey, but it's not taking them to the point of actually creating change. Whereas there's regulations, say in Europe, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, the CSRD, now that one is, you know, that sort of regulation is compulsory, and that will really start to drive change at all levels, at the company level, but also down to the site level. So it is a combination existing already, but I do feel like there needs to be more regulation, not in a prohibitive sense, but to help companies become more resilient and adaptable, because we need to take action. And it is, I think, a national responsibility to draw a line in the sand and say, this is what our society is expecting of businesses, and this is how we can achieve the goals that we need to reach together. Because right now we're not really sitting very well in the trajectory of the goals that have been set at a global scale. So I do think that there is need for regulation at the national level as well as the international to just really support businesses in this journey. It is a bit of a shock for businesses because it's so complex, and a lot of companies are still struggling with carbon, and that's one thing. And biodiversity is millions of things that all have interacting effects with each other. So I understand that it can be really, really daunting for companies on knowing where to start, what to do, how do I know it's going to work? But the key to that is starting with something that you know is important to your business and that you know is relevant to that site, and then monitoring over time, which gives you that capacity to make really smart decisions and to adapt as needed.
Can you share maybe a real-life example where a company used NatureHelm and it led to a meaningful change, either for their business or for perhaps the local ecosystem?
Yeah, sure. So we've sort of been working at different levels for different organizations. So we have been working with some farmers locally who are lamb producers. And we helped them by doing a really rapid screening of their farm and the surrounding landscape to just identify what species are known to occur there. This farmer has a goal himself of actually restoring his cleared farmland to a grassy woodland, which it would have been originally, with 30% canopy cover across the whole property. He's been working on this for 20 years. And so as part of that, he does a lot of restoration, revegetation initiatives, but he has to apply for funding to get that. And when we looked at the species mix that were around the property, we identified a critically endangered bird, which he wasn't aware of, which occurs in that area. So that then enabled him to open up new opportunities to apply for funding to actually implement the works on the ground. The other thing that he really wanted to achieve was to be able to build in ecotourism into his property, because we have really severe droughts. And when that happens, he has to destock his land to look after the land. And so he wanted to understand the biodiversity across the different habitats on his farm. And so he can produce a calendar. So and anyone who wanted to come and stay in a particular season, they go, oh, well, you can expect to see these species if you come in this season, etc. And so by helping him really understanding the monitoring data that he already has and helping him get maybe some very simple sensors and put them on the farm to monitor the species without needing technical knowledge is something else that he's adopted. So we've helped at that really like at an individual farm scale, but we're also working in the regenerative agriculture space in India. And this has been a really interesting one because we're working with certification bodies for regenerative agriculture, as well as regenerative farmers, so villages of regenerative farmers. So this is a much larger scale initiative. And this is within a tiger corridor between two national parks where there's all these cotton villages. And we're working with Wildlife Friendly, and they're the certifying that their practices are suitable for promoting wildlife. But they're also collecting data on soil carbon, the water holding capacity of the soil. They're collecting biodiversity data. And so we've actually been helping them look at that data, and we ingest it for them and help them clean it up so they can see for the first time the trends on what is actually happening. And they have data from regenerative agriculture, non-regenerative, and from the natural surrounding ecosystem. Very powerful data when you're trying to look at where you're trying to get, you know, have the land in the best quality it can be. So we've been able to visualize that data for them, engage with their stakeholders as well. And then the outputs that we produce are also used for educating the community and, you know, opening their minds as to the broader biodiversity that is known to occur in that area. But importantly, we're in the process at the moment of also capturing data from the farmers themselves, from interviews. So a client is pulling together that data, and we're going to ingest it in relation to human-wildlife conflict. So actually being able to map out where are the species that these conflicts happen, what are the beneficial insects and pest insects that are in that area. And all this information has been buried in reports until now. And so we're actually bringing it to life and enabling it to provide decision-making capacity for people on the ground. But these initiatives are funded by corporations that have global supply chains, such as the Regenerative Fund for Nature. And so the people who manage the funds or the corporations that run those funds, they also need metrics. They need indicators that they can report at a really high level across all their projects. So we're also working with the people on the ground to help them. They have the data to translate into something meaningful that they can report to their funding bodies. So there's a real beautiful synergy between being able to help people on the ground reporting to the corporations that are funding them, facilitating, you know, potentially additional funding to the ground, but also enabling corporates to have visibility right across their supply chain down to the local village or farm on exactly what they're doing and how impactful it actually is. Because from what we've seen, they're doing amazing work, and the quality of the soil and the, you know, the ability for it to retain water is higher in those regenerative management areas. So that's just a couple of examples of how the work.
These are all amazing examples. Now, my last two questions, one of them will be again personal. And I think you're an inspirational example as a woman leading a tech company in a deeply scientific field. What's that experience been like for you?
Oh, thank you. It's been interesting. And it was at a moment when we first founded Wildlife Drones, you know, a deep tech company. We had a fully female board, and I think that must be incredibly rare. And I was super proud of that. And more recently for Nature Home, we actually have a totally female board again right now. So I love that. I love to be able to set that example that this is possible. We have had men on the board as well. It's not, we don't like men, but it's just that we've got these amazing women who are on the board. And I, you know, I have worked in government, private sector, and at the university. And I have to say that, you know, at the university, it was pretty dismal. I had some pretty or very bad experiences in the academic scenario. So for me, it was really quite empowering to step into being an entrepreneur instead of being an academic. And I use a lot of the same skills that I had in academia. I have to apply for funding all the time. I have to make sure that I'm, you know, meeting the things that I've set out, goals that I've set out. But what I found was that the power was back in my hands as to who I work with and how I work with that. And so it's very, very important to me about how you treat other people and being respectful, no matter whether it's you know, a gender thing or a race or any other identity. To me, it's irrelevant. It's the people and the creativity and the passion that people bring that makes a truly special team. And what I've discovered is that, you know, you know, my small startup businesses, I have had more positive impact on the world than any of the work I did in government, private sector, anywhere else. It's been quite empowering. And I know I stopped learning. There's so much to learn about running a business itself. And so I have a much higher level of respect now for business people, because I understand a lot of the challenges there. But when I first started my entrepreneurial journey, and after having bad experiences with all my male colleagues at the university, I actually didn't know any female business women. I'd never met one, like literally my whole life. So I started going along to these events with a mission. I'm going to meet a woman who's in business, you know, and it's kind of strange to have to do that, but I did. And it was, I found some remarkable people. And one of those women, that first woman that I met, is still a mentor of mine today and is actually on my board. And she has an immense experience in science, material science, growing startups, supporting startups, technology. So it certainly had its challenges. I did find when I first started with the startup that my male colleagues were very much critical of, I didn't believe that I could do what I was setting out to do. But there's nothing like telling me I can't do something to get me inspired to prove wrong. So it has been challenging, but I think the antidote to that is just surrounding yourself with amazing people. And I've been very, very privileged to work with some really smart, creative people over time. And I get to pick who to work with now.
That must be really, really good. What was her name, by the way? The mentor that you had, you mentioned earlier?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, Sylvia Tulloch is the lady that I'm referring to. So, yeah, and she still is somebody that I will lean on if I'm confused or I'm overwhelmed or what have you. I will still go to her, and she always has some practical, non-judgmental advice that, you know, I often go to her with one question and I come away with 10 answers to things I didn't even think I was going to be asking about. So she's been amazing.
Well, then we also send our greetings to her from here, if she ever listens to it. Let me just close up with my final question. Very briefly, what's your dream for Nature Helm 5 years from now, or maybe 10 years? It's up to you. What's your dream? What would success look like?
Success would be when businesses have integrated nature into everyday processes and we're seeing the positive change on the ground and we can demonstrate it and really showing what is possible and that this is happening in every ecoregion of the world, that we can demonstrate this over at least 10 billion hectares is my goal. Of having causative change over 10 billion hectares is the ideal dream. And if we all contribute to that, then I think there's hope that we can really be much more sustainable in the world.
Dr. Debbie Sanders, thank you very much for joining Everything is Changing. And thank you very much for your amazing answers and this conversation.
Thank you. It's been really wonderful to share the story with you.
That was my conversation with Dr. Debbie Sanders. I loved hearing how she connects her deep background in ecology with new ideas in technology and business. If you enjoyed this episode, follow Everything is Changing on your favorite podcast app and share it with a friend who might enjoy it too. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. See you next time.